the Wanderers in all gold and black. You better retreat, cause we're on the attack. The strength of the wolf is the strength of the pack. We're Wolverhampton, we're on our way back.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 336. It's three. It's three. And it's six. It's the ENS Wolves podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Judah. And unfortunately, I've got to start the show in a solemn way. Please, everyone, in unison, bow your heads. There has been a death in the Wolves Poddy family. After 9 years giving his or her all through blood, sweat and tears all over the country, travelling everywhere from Shanghai to Switzerland, from Austria to Portugal. The podcast microphone has finally passed away. In recent episodes, the audio levels have been all over the shop, but from death comes life, and we have a new baby that we want to welcome in to the family. A new Yeti Nano. It's small, it's cute, it's compact, but just as good, if not better, than the original. And talking about micro, please welcome Wolverhampton Wanderers reporter for the Express and Star, Mr. Liam Keane.
That is absolutely dreadful of you. That is a disgrace. All I'm going to say, you're coming through loud and clear. You sound beautiful, but no, you're awful.
How's it going, sweetie?
Pretty good, mate. Pretty good. I'm gearing up for holiday, so I'm in holiday mode right now.
Of course. I'm sat back. This is your last game.
I'm not doing any work. I mean, journalists don't do any work anyway, and you know, we just sit around and bugger all and make stuff up, apparently. So,
100%.
I'm in a feisty mood this morning. I'm ready to go. I don't know. There's swimming. I don't know what's happened. I've been to the gym this morning. I've had my food.
A bit of testosterone.
I feel ready. I feel good. And by the way, I'm in absolutely outrageous shape.
Oh, my. Well, like you said, after last week, I mean, we know you're on the juice, lad. Maybe that's why you're a bit feisty. Maybe there's a bit of a mood swing coming on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. And you're talking of micro.
Exactly. I thought I didn't need to say the segue.
I could have gone one further,
but, you know, it's a PG show, at least at the first 5 minutes. I can't go straight into a certificate 18.
Wow, why not?
By the way, mate, talk about certificate 18. I mean, I put this on the poll the other day with what you were watching last night. Have you seen this baby reindeer?
So it's funny you mentioned that. I actually watched the first episode last night, and I haven't watched any more than that. So don't ruin it for me.
No. I'm not going to ruin it for anybody. I mean, I can say the premise is basically a female stalker that this guy gets, and his life's just bizarre. It's a fascinating, I think it's seven parts, between like half an hour and 45 minutes, most of the episodes. And I put this out on Twitter saying, you know, because I'm a big horror fan, or psychological kind of like strange situation. I kind of like all those kind of shows. And a few people said Baby Reindeer, and it just popped up on Netflix. So I decided to watch it. Watched it, binge watched it in two nights. Mate, absolutely mental. If you haven't watched it, I mean, it is disturbing, but you've got to watch it. And for it to be a true story as well is insane. Insane.
So watching, I noticed that it was a 18 age certificate on it, and I thought that doesn't bode well. No. I watched the first episode, and not a lot happens in the sense of being outrageous, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it's weird, and it's like, okay, there's something, there's a lot of things not right here, and you feel like there's so many twists and turns coming. So I'm actually genuinely concerned about what might be coming.
Oh, like, mate.
Answer me this.
Yeah.
Creepy, thriller, all that kind of stuff, I'm fine with that.
Mm.
Horror, not up my street. Now, obviously, with it being a true story, it's not going to be necessarily, it's not going to be, you know, ghosts and stuff like that.
No, is it scary? No, it's not scary. It's more just, like you say, psychologically disturbing, I would say. It's less it and more Sleeping with the Enemy, if you've seen that back in the day, Julia Roberts. It's more bunny boiler situation. But I think we've all had a little bit of crazy exes, etc. You've had the old, you've had a a few people on a weekly basis slide into your DMs, Keane, haven't you?
No, unfortunately not. I wish they would. You know, if anyone wants
Mate, not if you're watching this show, you wouldn't. You wish they would not, I tell you.
I'm joking. Rosie will not be very pleased. No, unfortunately not. It's funny you mentioned that I watched the first episode last night and thought to myself, this has got all the makings of a Nathan Judah documentary. This is like his life playing out in front of me.
Oh my goodness, can you imagine? I hope not. Some of the stuff that goes on in it, crikey.
I'm looking forward to watching more of it, and then we can update on the pod once I've managed to get through it all.
Get some episodes done before Arsenal, mate, on Saturday, so we can discuss some more.
I'll definitely get at least one or two in before Arsenal.
Definitely 100%. I think it's fine. I think when you're getting to like episode 3-4, that's where you need to gritty. Don't be as I was, eating my dinner watching it. Not good.
Oh no, I'm actually getting excited about this now. I can't wait to watch it. Right,
did you watch Champions League last night? What did you go for?
By the looks of it, I don't think either game were particularly great, but I watched City Madrid, and City battered them, didn't they? But
why would you watch Arsenal for a bit of homework for Saturday? But that's fine. You watch City Madrid.
Well, you'd think that, wouldn't you? You'd think, but as
well,
I've said,
I was, look, but as long as one of us, we don't do any work.
We don't do anything. We just sit around and chill out. So no. I went for City Madrid. That's to me always going to be the better game, and I was proved wrong. It was a bit naff. It was all right.
So you mentioned Qatar. When are you off?
I'm off on Tuesday.
Oh, okay. So not only are you going to somewhere where the human rights are absolutely horrific, you're going for 5 to 6 days, and you've timed it perfectly by missing a pre-match presser on the Tuesday, a game on the Wednesday, a pre-match presser on the Friday, and then a game on the Saturday. So I think, actually, in terms of picking your dates so far, you've absolutely nailed it.
Well, in my defence, when it was booked, which was October, the Bournemouth game was a weekend still. So that game would have been played weeks ago, wouldn't have been an issue. I would have just missed one presser, one game, no issues. Obviously, Wolves' FA Cup exploits meant that it was rearranged, and I'm now missing a couple games. I wish I wasn't, especially home games, but, you know, what can you do? I've got to go.
You can change your flights.
No. I've got to go. It's all booked, all ready to go. I've got to go get a nice picture riding a camel, and that's not a euphemism. And all that touristy stuff.
One humps or two?
I don't know if I get to choose, to be honest.
It's a bizarre destination to go to. That, of all the places where you're going with, what, you're going for 4 or 5 days, Qatar would definitely not be on my top 100. Like, joking aside,
I'll give you the reason why exactly. So Rosie's made it very clear to me that she's not got any interest in going to the Middle East at all. So that's Dubai or anywhere. She's not interested at all, doesn't want to go. Yeah. Which is fair enough. Not
well. There's your explanation. Just stop there. Your missus doesn't want to go. I'm off. Happy days.
I'll see you later. I'm not particularly desperate to go to those locations, but to have an opportunity to experience it at least once, because I like traveling. I like going to different places. Just to experience it at least once, see what it's like. And a friend of mine is on a 2-year contract working over there as a teacher. The stars aligned. A couple of my other mates from uni fancy going as well. So we thought, why not? Let's just go see what it's like, go experience it, have a look around, do some touristy stuff, and get extremely burnt in the process.
What have you got? Who have you got as your emergency contact if you get arrested?
You?
Oh, okay. I'll take that, yeah. We can do a live feed when they call. I'll stick it on the old new Blue Yeti Nano and we can all have a good listen. See what
I don't think it would happen, because it would be one of those scenarios where... if they attempted to detain me, it would be do you know who I am situation.
Give me the big end. Obviously, you just check YouTube?
Obviously, I'm joking. Just go check YouTube, mate.
Google me, crack.
Google me. Could you actually imagine saying that? That's one of the most embarrassing things. 100% you've said that.
100% I've said that. She walked straight out the door.
That is so awful. You're just down, you know, your local pub in Dorrit. Do you know who I am?
Man, I don't even go into the pub. You know me. Come on. There's absolutely not a chance. I mean, I feel uncomfortable when I'm having lunch with you in a pub. If it's a gastro pub, just about. But yeah, no, not for me. Not for me. No interest into the ale. Talking about interesting situations, before we get on to Nottingham Forest 2, Wolverhampton Wanderers 2, can we just talk about, and we have discussed previously, that food at Nottingham Forest. Thank God we stopped at the Starbucks to get some. Because the slop, and I mean slop, that was on offer. This chicken, rice, congealed amalgamation that you walk past and it just smelt of cheese was horrific. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. Thank goodness we stopped and got a wrap to take with us.
Yeah, we made it pretty clear on the last poddy that we weren't fans of the food at Forest. To their credit, when we turned up, they'd redone all the media room and everything. It was actually quite nice. It was a lot better than the old one, and the press conference room and all that kind of stuff has all been redone. So that was a pleasant surprise when we arrived. The first thing that hit me was the smell, as you said. We then went and spoke to a colleague who will remain nameless.
Yeah.
Who then said, it is the worst meal I've ever eaten in my life.
Horrendous.
And he was sat there eating it as we came over.
Well, he was moving it around his plate. I wouldn't say he was eating.
Well, yeah, that's true. He was trying to avoid eating it while eating it at the same time. It was it didn't look great. And I for a split second I thought, no, I can't even think about it. I can't do it. Went, sat down, was eating my wrap, ignored it. Someone else sat near me eating it, and I actually caught a whiff of it. And it smelled dreadful.
Mate, horrendous.
It smelled so bad. It looked bad as well. It was some sort of like Chinese chicken curry thing, wasn't it? Or I don't know. It was horrendous.
Actually, and also, I mean, people might think, oh, they turn their nose up at food. Absolutely ridiculous. Free food. This is what, and I'm not joking, I have been sent through the menu for Saturday. Arsenal versus Wolves. Shall I give you the menu, what we get compared to what Forest provided?
Wait, have you actually got the menu for...
I have got the menu in front of me.
This is exciting. Right, hit me, let's go.
Are you ready? They're genuinely, like, this is not taking a piss. This is literally the menu for Saturday. Compared to cheesy slop, rice and chicken swimming around in some sort of congealed sweat, this is what we get on Saturday. Arsenal versus Wolves menu. Chef's table, homemade classic beef lasagna. Garlic and herb ciabatta, herb roasted new potatoes, mixed salad. Also, option, homemade vegetable lasagna. Grab-and-go salad pots, parma ham, salami, herb marinated broccolini, calamata olives, homemade hummus, mixed lettuce, char-grilled chicken, toasted butternut squash salad, compressed watermelon, plant-based feta cheese, toasted seed granola, pea tendrils. To follow, fruit of the forest cheesecake, creme chantilly, and a chocolate shard, dark chocolate and mocha mousse, tiramisu profiteroles, dark chocolate sauce, chocolate shard. Half time, individual handmade sausage rolls, individual vegetable rolls, freshly brewed fair trade tea and coffee.
I'll be honest with you, my mouth is watering as we speak.
I mean, we have it, honestly, we have it rough. we have to slum it every other week at Molyneux. But can you... You can understand why we've become food snobs over these last few years with you, because, you know, when you're getting that kind of service, that level of quality at Wolves, and then you go to Forest, and that's before the shit show of the game, it's just horrendous. Horrendous.
I mean, to Wolves' credit, it is very nice.
I mean, look, it wasn't always like this. I can remember going back into the Kenny Jackie days, and you're looking to get a soup and a muffin at half-time. But this is next level. This is definitely top eight in the Premier League food. Look, it's not Spurs. It's not Spurs, but I'm telling you what, in terms of quality of food, it's getting up there towards Arsenal standards.
It's very nice. And now that the portion sizes have been what's the word? Negotiated.
Yes.
It's top tier. But you've got to bear in mind that, and listeners of the podcast will know this by now. That when it comes to food, I've got a big appetite.
You do.
I love my food. My standards aren't really low, but they're definitely not as high as yours. I'm happy to eat.
We're still talking food.
Still talking food, but you never know. We're still talking food. Not really low, but I'm willing to, you know, eat things that you probably wouldn't. Put it that way.
I feel like we've just got a little bit of football in the first 14 minutes, but there's people sometimes who say, guys, this is great, but you know, the banter. You have 10 minutes of banter before we get into the football.
We'll get there.
We're 15 minutes in. We're getting into it. Okay, let's have a go.
You've got to remember.
Go on.
To finish this point.
Yeah.
Because of that and how, you know, much I like my food. Mm-hmm. You've got to imagine, for the people that weren't there, imagine how bad this food at Forest must have been.
Oh, mate.
Even I was turning it down. If I was turning it down.
That's true.
And I barely even thought about it for a split second after I saw it and smelt it. Horrendous.
Honestly, I genuinely wouldn't give that to Blue and Stitch. Genuinely wouldn't give it. Not a chance. Right, Forest 2, Wolves 2, the good, the bad and the ugly. Let's start with the good first. And we've got to speak about the person who, Brazilian international, who got his first start. We were hoping he got his first start. One of the goals of the season for me. Absolutely brilliant. I thought for the minutes he was on the pitch, was it 70-ish? 70?
I forget the exact number, but it was in the 70s, yeah.
It was around 70 minutes, and my goodness, how they look a better side with him in this. Just having, look, no offence to like Chuomi and you know, Nathan Fraser, but when you've got a Brazilian international up front, you look a lot more threatening, even though he was, I think, isolated for large parts of this game because, you know, Wolves weren't particularly good in big periods. But that goal was, from an individual point of view, as good as I've seen this season. It was superb. It was out of nothing. I even said to you, I think I screamed out when Cunha had ran from basically inside his own half to the edge of the box. I'm going, look, there's no one there. Who is there? There's absolutely zero people in the box or making a run that the, you know, 20 yards behind him. Well, he doesn't need them because that is an insane finish. I'm sure it's going to be one of the Goal of the Month contenders. And if he doesn't win it, it's going to take something to beat it. But what a magnificent moment. I'm so pleased for him after coming off, really, the back of that hat-trick against Chelsea. This was his first proper start. First start again. I know he started in the game that he came off injured before their injury. But first 70 minutes back. And what a strike. It was definitely an amazing moment.
It was. I always like it when you get animated in the press box. Doesn't happen that often, but it is quite fun when it does happen. It reminds me of the Connor Cody last-minute equaliser at Chelsea a couple of seasons ago. I think we were both basically on the pitch when that goal went in.
I don't care about people who are getting annoyed about us. Don't care.
Whatever. We were talking sort of during the first half, weren't we, between the two of us about the quality of the Wolves' performance. And I was finding positives in it from the negatives, but for these reasons, because it wasn't a free-flowing performance. It wasn't a particularly attacking, threatening performance. It wasn't a performance from Wolves where you thought they were going to score a lot of goals. But what it was a performance where they were frustrating Forest, the City Ground crowd, which is normally pretty loud and makes a pretty decent atmosphere, was very, very quiet. It was, you know, you could hear a pin drop in there. There was
a huge game for them as well.
Exactly, yeah. I think that plays a part in it as well. It's such a massive game for them, and obviously they've got difficult fixtures, particularly at home, to, you know, in the running to try and stay up. So understandably, you know, that plays a part as well. But equally, I thought Wolves' performance played a massive part in that they were frustrating, they were slowing the game down. I said to you during the game, I said, Wolves are, from what I can see, are making a conscious effort to slow the game down. Every time they get in the ball, it's sidewards, backwards passes. Mm-hmm. It's not the most exciting football to watch, but it was with the intent of slowing the game down to the point where Forest couldn't get the crowd into it, couldn't get possession. Yeah. And when Forest did get possession, Wolves defended fairly well in that first half. So for the most part, it wasn't an exciting performance or a particularly threatening performance, but it was one that was quite effective as an away performance, as a sort of stereotypical away performance. And then out of nowhere, on the 40th minute, I think it was, Jose Sarr quite quickly and intelligently rolls out to Matheus Cunha. And you're absolutely right, he had no one around him, nothing to do really, apart from get his team up the pitch, which is, in an interview after the game, he said that that's all he was trying to do, just try and get Wolves up the pitch and get them out of their own half. Out of nowhere, squeezes between two defenders into the box onto his right foot, and the rest is, as they say, history. I thought it was a magnificent solo goal, a brilliant strike, and he announced his return to the starting 11 with style.
And it kind of shows what they've been missing because of the contrast between both goals. One, an individual brilliant goal that will be remembered for a long time to come, and the second, a tap-in. But that's what good strikers do. That's what superstars do. And that's why he's such a fan's favourite, because that's what you want. I say strikers or number 10s, or, you know, we can argue what you want. He had to actually play, you know, number 9 in this situation. With Gary Neal said afterwards that he didn't really want to play him in that position, but needs must. But it just shows, doesn't it, that that's what you need. And you're someone who can score sublime goals like that, but also get the tap-ins and take a gamble, and that's exactly what he delivered with that brace.
Yeah, no, yeah, interesting on the position, because he played majority, didn't he? Striker, a little bit on the left in the second half, briefly, yeah, before he came off, but majority through the middle. But ironically, the first goal comes from him running down the left flank, and so do a few of the dangerous moments from Mateus Cooney during the game. But yeah, you're absolutely spot on. Look, you have the spectacular, and at the same time, if Wolves are going to pick up any points in these remaining games, alongside the spectacular from players like Mateus Cunha, who have such brilliant quality in them, you have to have these scrappy moments as well. And he does it perfectly. He reacts quickest. I know there was a very brief VAR check for the handball, but I mean, his arms, you know, close to his body, down to his side, it bounces off him. It's not.
I know, but you were just thinking, you're just fearing what was. No, you know,
there's always that worry. Anymore. Yeah, but yeah. It was a quite quick check as well. It was never going to be handball, I thought. But he's been fouled at the same time by Danilo. He's been dragged to the floor. So had he not scored, it might have been a penalty. And but he reacts quickest and has a tap in from 3 or 4 yards that earns Wolves a point in the end, because they've gone 1-0 up. They've dropped 2 poor goals, obviously one right at the end of the first half, and you need to quickly get back into it. And it was only 5 minutes from the second goal from Danilo, ironically, going in. Then Mateus Cunha drags Wolves level and drags them a point. It wasn't a vintage performance from the team, but it was 2 moments of quality for 2 different reasons from a very, very good player in Mateus Cunha.
So that was the good Mateus Cunha, the bad defending, Liam. It seems a while since we've had a clean sheet. Correct me if I'm wrong. You probably will do in a minute, but disappointing errors, really. And this is, you know, I think it's got a lot to do, and we'll come on to Craig Dawson afterwards and what Gary Neil said in his post-match presser, but I do think they missed Dawson, or fit Dawson in the middle of that defence, regardless of, you know, how good Max Kilman has been. I don't think he's been particularly good in the last month, to be honest, but I do, and I've spoken to you about this off microphone, saying I do still think that Max Kilman is a very good central defender when he's got an experienced person beside him. And I'm not too sure. I'm not putting all the blame on Max Kilman. I'm not. There's definitely individual errors there and collective errors across the defence. But I still feel like he is a better player when he's got an experienced person beside him. I don't think he's that outstanding centre-back where he makes other people better around him. I still think he's learning the game, which maybe you can argue, maybe you can say that you completely disagree, but, you know, he's not in and around that England squad. There was talk of him, I think, last season. It's been a couple of seasons, and Gareth Kerman seen it, and he's actually had poor games when he has been in the crowd. And I still think that he's still a way to go for him to become an elite centre-back at the Premier League in his own right.
Yeah, Wolves' last clean sheet in all competitions was 28th of February, that 1-0 FA Cup win over Brighton. The last league one was actually the Sunday before that against Sheffield United, the 1-0 win at Molineux. So yeah, it's been a little while since a clean sheet, and Wolves have not been blessed with clean sheets this season. As much as goal scoring has improved,
yeah,
they've also definitely shipped more goals as well. And it's an interesting one, because I find myself largely agreeing with you, because in my opinion, Max Kilman's had a very good and very consistent season. I think we both put him, did we both put him around 7 or 8, did we, in our player of the season?
Yeah, I think I had
season?
Him about 7th, yeah.
Yeah, so for me, he's had a very good... ago. Yeah, a very good and consistent season. I think there's a big argument to say that actually, throughout the season as a whole, he's actually been better than Craig Dawson this season. I think Craig Dawson has had a few slumps, albeit a good season, but a few slumps during the campaign. I think Totti Gomez is up there as well, if you're going to consider the defenders and the impact he makes. So overall, it's been a very good campaign for Max Kilman, without a doubt. But there's always been that question mark next to him, hasn't there, about can he do it without Connor Cody? Can he do it without Craig Dawson? And over the last month or so, he definitely has, alongside the team, hit a bit of a dip in form. And I find that for someone of his size, because he's a big man, he's a big guy, he should and could be a lot more commanding than he is. And I think that's part of the learning curve that he's still on. That is going to be the biggest thing for him and biggest challenge, because I think positionally and awareness-wise and as a natural defender, I think he's got all very good qualities. And I think he's a very good Premier League defender who's done very well for Wolves this season. But there's still that question mark next to him. And, And as I've sort of brushed that question mark aside a bit this season because of the consistency we've shown from him. But I find myself having to come back to it over the last month or so, as you say, because of that dip in form. And I just find that, yeah, he switched off a few too many times recently for someone who's been so important to the team and who is obviously captain. I think you need a little bit more. Hopefully, Craig Dawson will play this season. But obviously, there's a massive question mark over whether he's had that surgery or not and whether he will play. So Max Kilman and Santi Bueno and Totti Gomez, you'd imagine all three of them will play pretty much every game. I'm gonna have to do without. And I think the defending, as you mentioned, at the City Ground was left a little bit to be desired. The first goal, I think, I'm sure we'll come on to it, but VAR potentially needs to look at a push on Nelson Semedo. But I think Kilman also loses Gibbs White as he runs off him and sort of nudges Semedo to get to the ball. And the second goal was a bit of a calamity of errors, really, wasn't it, between Doherty and Kilman and sort of the rest of the defence. And to allow those players to get through and score that goal, I think, is, silly.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it there, so we'll just explain it. Post-match with Gary, and he said that Craig Dawson, the maximum amount he could have played in that game was 10 minutes, which I think was a bit of a shock to us all with him being on the bench recently, and we're all hoping that he was going to start the game. But he says that, look, he's going above and beyond. He's there for the team. If he had 10 minutes to give and we needed him, then we would have put him on. But 10 minutes was all he could play, and they needed to make a call on whether he was going to have an operation on his groin. Was it hernia or was it groin? I think it was
groin. Was groin, the injury, I believe. Yeah.
Later this week, I'm sure he'll update us tomorrow at the pre-match press conference for Arsenal. When you ask him, sure, get asked that question. And then he wasn't sure whether that would rule him out for the rest of the season or not. So judging by that, I assume it's kind of a minor operation. But something that needs to get done. And I'm sure they'll be looking and speaking to the medical department and wondering whether they can get a few games out to him before he has this operation. Can we get him to the end of the season? Can we get him in a position where he can play some football? And if not, then I think that he probably will go under the knife and will remain to be seen if and when he can recover. But definitely a loss for Wolves. And I think that with a Craig Dawson, if I'm picking my best 11, Liam, and I think you'll agree, it will be 3/5 at the back, and Craig Dawson will be in that three, along with Max Kilman and Totti Gomez.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think Santi Bueno's done fairly well, actually, since he's sort of had a bit of a run in the team. Obviously, the Coventry game was a bad one for him. Ipswich on his debut, which is a long time ago now, back in September, was a really bad one for him, which I found quite amusing, not sort of a massive criticism really, Gary, because managers do this all the time, but Gary O'Neill sort of picked out Santi during an answer after that Ipswich game and said, you know, I thought he did quite well on his debut, and then only the other week referenced that Ipswich game and Santi Bueno, and so, you know, obviously he struggled. did give me a bit of a laugh, because anyone could see that Santi Bueno really struggled in that game. He was getting turned all over the place, flat-footed, at fault for a couple of the goals potentially. Obviously a long time ago, but not a great debut from the defender. And he needed time to, you know, he hadn't played a lot of football, needed time to get up to speed and get up to speed with English football. Had one or two games here and there, but has had a bit of a run now. And aside from the Coventry game and maybe a couple of the moments, has done fairly well. But I'd have to agree that, yeah, he drops out and Dawson plays if they're all fit and you're picking your best 11. And that is probably, considering the number of injuries to attacking personnel and the size of the squad, losing Dawson at the time that Wolves did, it's probably been a bit of a, gone under the radar a bit of how big a blow that has been for Wolves as well.
Yeah, I think you're right there. It's a good point, really. You talk about the forwards, you talk about the strikers, you talk about people missing, but as essential, if not more, is your stalwart at centre-back, who's been so important, not just marshalling the troops and giving experience, but also a threat at the other end of the pitch as well. Takes players away at corners, at set pieces. And let's hope there's some good news coming out of the press conference, and maybe they can get through the season without him having this operation, and we might see him, you know, in the starting lineup before too long. But watch this space. So the good, Mateus Cunha, the bad, the defending, and the ugly has to be Morgan Gibbs-White. look, what did you make of it? I mean, My take on it is he's having a very good season. He's had a very good two seasons for Nottingham Forest, but they're still battling against relegation, aren't they? So it can't be all rosy there. I get it. Look, he's had some stick, and I'll be honest, warranted, to be honest, for his time while he was at Wolves, for his off-the-field situation, on the field, you know, some of his performances. I think that it was probably a break that he needed to make with the club. And look, he's playing a role where he's got decent amount of goals, decent amount of assists. I still don't get the berating. I can understand giving a bit back, but we've been there, we've done that. We've done this under Lopetegui. We've been there. Like, did he really need to do that celebration in front of the fans? And look, this is, I don't know. Look, he plays the heel, and if he wants to do that, if he wants to go down that route, then let him. I think Morgan Gibbs-White is not the sharpest tool in the box. I'll be honest. That's what I'm going to say. From the time he was at Wolves, and what I've seen at the training ground, from what I've seen in pre-season, what I've seen with some of the misdemeanors he's done during COVID and stuff, I don't think he is particularly intelligent, as a hyper-intelligent athlete. And I think that will ultimately cost him in terms of making the very best moves at the very best clubs and maybe playing at the very highest level. He's still an excellent footballer, a brilliant footballer, and dare I say it, he would be in Wolves' side at this moment in time. But it's not to be. But I think that he's got to rise above it a little bit. And I think every time he does okay against Wolves, or if he's done okay, or if he's scored a penalty, or if he's scored a goal, does he need to do that? For me, no.
The very first thing I'll say is that, obviously, it's not been this case for a little while, but when he first left, there was that bit of animosity with Forrest, and obviously a little bit of back and forth with Lopetegui, things like that. Social media sort of abuse directed at the player or directed at his family or whatever is obviously unacceptable regardless of what happened. So that's the first thing I'll say. And I can understand why there's going to be some anger on, well, I'm assuming anger. I don't know, obviously I don't know Morgan personally, but assuming anger on his side with that sort of thing. So from that point of it, I get it. And obviously, that isn't the vast majority of fans. That is a tiny majority of idiots on social media. And it's not just Morgan Gibbs-White. It's everyone. It's any other player you can think of. It's other clubs. It's me and you sometimes. It's, you know, whatever it might be. Social media is its own sort
of... We all get it, Liam.
Exactly.
There's a way of...
No. I'm just saying that. I think that's an important thing to mention, because there's definitely, not recently, but there has been previously some things directed towards family, or probably more than him in some ways, that's unwarranted and just a bit out of order. So I think it's important to mention that, because that plays some sort of role. Now, with the sort of back and forth, he's always going to get it from the fans, or at least recently anyway, and, you know, they're going to chant about him when the game's on, and that's always going to happen. And in my opinion, it was always going to happen that he was going to celebrate and react like that if he got the opportunity to. I think I've got a slightly different opinion on it to you. I don't actually mind it that much. If he's going to take a little bit of it, he's going to give a little bit of it back. But at the same time, if he's going to give it a bit back and then the fans continue, obviously in the right way, I don't mean the sort of social media stuff that we've seen, but in terms of chanting about him or whatever it is at a game, then he's got to accept that at the same time. You can't do what you do in celebrating and then complain about the fact that, which I've not seen him do, but I just think it's an important thing to mention. So I don't actually mind that he gives a little bit and takes a little bit. I think it's probably fair enough, but provided that's where it sort of ends. It begins and ends at the game, on the field, whatever. But it's all,
I mean,
just
Liam, there were FA charges going on last season.
Well, exactly, I know.
It's not as if this is an innocent, you know, and I know... you know, Wolves got the brunt of it in coming into fines, but come on, mate! Like, he's not helping himself, is he?
If he wants to go and
play for Arsenal or Man City, or, you know, and go down that, he's going to have to change his character and change his attitude, because that kind of subjective criticism, not just from one club but from nations, from countries. If you're playing at the very highest level, you're going to get that tenfold. And if you can't adapt to that, if you can't take that on board, why do you think Jack Grealish is playing at the highest level? Because he can laugh it off and he can have a bit of a laugh and a joke. And actually, and I'm sure some people still can't stand Jack Grealish, but actually he's proved himself to be a bloody good footballer and actually quite a decent lad. And I don't think Morgan Gibbs-White's close to doing that. So if you want to play at the highest level, mate, You've got to be better than that. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter about back and forth between the fans. You've got to rise above it as an individual, and you've got to concentrate on your game, concentrate on getting yourself out the bloody relegation zone or close to it. Maybe start playing a bit better. And if you want it, if you think you're the best, if you think you're the bee's knees, even though you were pretty crap, to be honest, for a lot of the time when he was given a chance at Wolves, then show him on the pitch, get your move, get yourself in that England squad, get yourself to a Champions League side, and mature. That's what I'm saying.
Now, the final words you said there, mature, I think was exactly the point I was going to make next. So I completely agree, actually, with all of that, that if you want to move that career on, and you probably need to act in a certain way. But I don't know if that, at the moment, there is that desire. I think he just quite enjoys playing the pantomime villain.
Big fish in a small pond.
If that's what he wants to do,
he's 24 years old, Liam. He's 24. He's not a 18-year-old kid.
If he's gonna take it, he wants to give it a bit back, fine, whatever. But then you've got to take everything that comes with that at the same time. And I think maturity is probably the key thing here. Going back to your earlier points of tools and sharpness.
look at lockdown and going to these parties. And
yeah,
just
I think maturity is the thing.
I guess maturity it is, but what I'm saying to you, that was three years ago, 4 years ago now, and it doesn't seem like there's been a lot of advancement from then. That's all I'm saying. And some people will agree with you, some people will agree with me. That's why in a podcast, we can't agree all the time. But it's frustrating because he's a very good footballer, of course, but just doesn't seem like intellectually he's matured to the level that he should be playing at the very top level.
Yeah, the maturity is the thing for me. I think if that was advancing, then it probably doesn't happen the way... The way it happens. For me, to be honest, the final thing I take away from it all is it's all, and I said this on the pre-match show with Mikey Burrows and Tomo, that for me it's all just a little bit sad the way it happened. You know, he's a local lad. The way he left was all a bit under a cloud. I know for a fact that the day that he left, and I said this on our live podcast at the time, that the day that he left the club, he was, you know, upset, you know, leaving Compton for the final time. It was, you know, there were tears and he didn't necessarily want to be moving anywhere. It was all just a little bit sad the way that the relationships deteriorated. But then he hasn't helped himself with that relationship deteriorating. And if he's going to carry on acting like that and giving a bit back when he takes a bit, he's only human, you know, people react, so I get it. But then at the same time, you've got to take everything that comes with that. And that might mean that there's going to be a lot of people out there that think you're a bit of an idiot. And
yeah, you know. You do. You can be potentially sad to leave and then come back as Forrest and say, oh, I wish I was staying here. I wish I was playing under this and this and A and B and C and D. But then at the same time, you can't, you know, give it the big end with your ears and then kiss the badge and show it to the Wolves fans. I mean,
yeah.
Come on, mate.
No, exactly.
So, yeah, anyway, we've talked enough about Morgan Gibbs White. But, you know, I think good discussion and one that we had to have, really, and probably put that to bed now for going forward. And look, we might not even see him next season, might we, playing the Championship. So, goals for the rest of the season, Liam. So, look, you talk about Champions League football last night. We talk about the games. Kind of slightly, indirectly, wasn't a great situation for Wolves. I know we said going into the game and the Forest game, it's a must-win for European football. Arsenal lost again. Obviously got beat by Villa at the weekend. And I said in my newsletter the other day that this was yesterday, going in before the Arsenal game they played on the evening, that, look, Arsenal not in a great situation at this moment in time. If Wolves can really get going and they can give Arsenal a game, I was kind of writing that game off as a defeat. If they can win that game, then, you know, you've got Bournemouth coming, you've got Luton at home, then you have got still a little bit of a sniff. However, we didn't expect Man City and Arsenal to go out of the Champions League last night. The coefficient has dropped England into, I think, third, and it's the top two in the table nationwide. So unless there's a crazy turnaround in Europa League games this evening, I believe that there will not be an extra Champions League spot. Now, that trickle-down effect will mean that it looks like there will be seven spots for Europe this season and not eight, almost certain. So I think, and I'm sorry, peeps, it looks like the barbecue is well and truly dead, which I think is the biggest gut wrench for the thousands listening at home. So apologies for that. We might have some sort of barbecue bet next season, but it looks like it's game over now. So if Europe is out the question, Liam, it looks that way. Look, I think they need West Ham and Villa and Liverpool to turn it around tonight, and then there might be some sort of calculation that maybe eighth might be back in play. But I think we've got to say that seventh is in all likelihood the last European spot. And with Chelsea, the way that they're performing, with Newcastle, with some of the teams above them, it looks like it's beyond them. So what is the goal between now and the end of the season? Is it just to finish as high as possible? Is it as simple as that? They're 11th in the table now. They're a point away from Brighton in 10th. They've got a game in hand over West Ham, who are in 8th. But so Chelsea have two games in hand over them as well. So is it top half finish? I put a poll out saying, if Wolves finished 11th this season, what would you consider the season to be? Great, very good, good, or okay? And I think very good won the poll, over 2,000 votes. I think probably about 43% people thought it'd be very good. And then good, I think, came second, and great was third. So is it top half the aim now, or is it just coasting and seeing what you can between now and then season, but going into next season?
I think very good is probably where I would put it as well, actually, if they were to finish 11th. It can't be top, top tier.
Yeah, let me get
tier.
The actual poll results out, because I can...
yeah, go for it. It won't be top, top tier because of, you know, the ambitions that were created during the season of going for Europe and obviously the FA Cup situation. But
I think if they were playing a semi-final this weekend, I think you would have more great than...
Yeah, potentially, yeah. But then obviously because of where they were at last summer, it's got to be very good because people thought Wolves were going down. So
yeah, 1,500 votes. If Wolves finished the season 11th, how would you rate it? Great, 16%. Very good, 47%. Good, 32%. And okay, 5%.
That makes sense. I think it is as simple as saying you have to finish as high as you can, with the caveat of, you know, top half would be ideal. But the reason it's as simple as that is for a couple of things. Mm-hmm. One being giving the fans something to cheer about, finishing the season on a high and not finishing it fizzling out, which is, I know, the phrase you've used a lot because of what happened with the Bruno Lage year and various other seasons, where if you just go into the summer with a bit of that bad feeling towards how the campaign finished, it not always, but can affect how you start the next season and start pre-season. So I think that's an important thing to mention, first of all. But secondly, and it's very, very simple, finish as high as you can to get as much prize money from the Premier League as you can. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Get that money in, have more revenue, basically, and have hopefully a slightly more comfortable summer. Obviously, one or two spaces is only going to be about 2.5 million or so for each space. So it's not a huge amount, but every step you are above 17th, where some people felt Wolves were going to finish, is going to be a bonus, isn't it? So yeah, get that. And of course, that's what we explained before, where they budgeted PSR for as well, was for 17th. So anything above that is a bonus in terms of money coming in. So for those two reasons, have a good crack at the final six games. The home games they've got are going to be really important as well to that. And get as much money as you can. Sounds pretty simple.
Yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it? And I feel like there is a tinge around Molyneux and around the training ground and around Gary O'Neill of what could have been. We've seen Pedro Neto's back on the grass in a training. Gary O'Neill said that we might see him feature potentially in the last three games of the season. Hwang Hee-chan's back and looked like all of a sudden he gave a goal threat straight away to this side. And, you know, Liam, you're probably looking at... I'm sure they'll get a couple of wins between now and the season, and they'll get a couple of defeats. And I would have thought they'll be in and around where they are now. And you could end the season with a Cunha, Neto and Hwang firing all cylinders. And you just think, oh, guys, I wish this was, you know, a month ago. And it would have been probably a very different story, not only in terms of FA Cup, and by the way, I would really fancy them against Manchester United, but also in terms of the league. So, yeah, it's just like you say, you don't get too many bites of the cherry when it comes to this stage of the season of the higher positions, and it's just a shame that it's all happened at once with these injuries.
Yeah, I think it might be too simple to say this, but I'm going to say it regardless. Having watched what Mateus Cunha did at the weekend and obviously the season he's had overall, it might be simple enough to say if Wolves just had Mateus Cunha fit and available and no injury happened, Wolves might be in a semi-final this weekend.
Oh, I agree entirely.
Still in the European picture. If they didn't have any injuries, which obviously is always going to be unlikely, but let's say Neto didn't get a serious injury, Hwang wasn't out for 5-6 weeks, Wolves would be in such a brilliant position right now. But the argument that a lot of people made, and we discussed on this podcast at the time as well in January, was that do Wolves need to bring any forwards in? Do they need to, you know, bring someone in, whether it's a permanent or a loan, and it not be the right deal just to get a body in? Do they need to, should they wait rather for the summer and the perfect deal? There was a few people, I think me included, that argued that that might be the right move. So it's slightly disingenuous then to turn around and say, oh, they should have brought someone in January. I always made the point that numbers-wise, they were running a risk and that they haven't got a big squad. And if injuries happen, it was going to be detrimental. They're going to be in trouble. But I also felt that if you're going to bring someone in who's, you know, going to play here and there and it's not necessarily going to be the most impactful signing, then do you necessarily need to do it? Do you hold fire and go for it in the summer? So
I don't think that's the criticism. I think that's fair enough. And injuries happen, but if they didn't happen, we'd be praising the decisions to the hilt and they'd be getting it. But they did take a gamble. And for me, it wasn't bringing another body in. It was letting the bodies go, i.e. Sascha Kalajdzic, Fabio Silva, when there wasn't anyone brought in. That was the mistake for me. It wasn't not bringing someone in, but it was not having the backup just in case this didn't happen.
Yeah, and actually, because we discussed that, I think it was on the last poddy we spoke about that, wasn't it?
I think a couple of poddies ago. Now.
Yeah, yeah. So I did ask Gary about that, and all those quotes will be available to read tomorrow in print as well. But yeah, I asked him about that. Obviously, the first thing he said was that both those players were desperate to go play. Sasha, considering the injury, needed minutes, obviously, and Fabio wanted to go and play because he wasn't playing. He did also add that, you know, he was disappointed, obviously, with the injury to Sasha because he was hoping that he would come back fitter and stronger in time for next season. So there was a sort of an open admission that he wanted him around the squad for next year because there was a few question marks whether Sasha might be around permanently or not. But there was that sort of brief admission from Gary that he wanted him back in and around it next season, without this injury, of course. But yeah, I sort of put it to him and say, well, is it a communication error between, you know, yourselves and the hierarchy, or was it the players were too expensive or whatever it was? And I think let me read out the quote very quickly. I think this would be probably useful.
Sure.
So as I quote, he said, the club had options available and then the financial restrictions, which are real and are there, prevented us from doing all of them. There wasn't a lack of willingness or a lack of work. Some were more expensive than we thought. And those sort of things happen in football. Normally, you would realise it's more expensive, but still do it because we let two strikers go, but we couldn't do that. We had to stick by the financial restrictions because we've seen from other clubs how serious and significant the penalties can be. We've ended up in an unfortunate situation that needs to be learned from and not be repeated because we want the team to be successful. So, basically, he's saying, and he's spoken about this a few times, that and obviously, you'll remember at the time he said Sasha won't be going anywhere until we've got a replacement lined up, which obviously didn't happen in the end. That was originally the club's stance, which they went back on because, well, the move was there for Sasha and his partner was having their first baby and they wanted to move for family reasons, etc. But, yeah, they allowed him to go. Obviously, Fabio had gone very, very early before the window had even started, it was agreed, and he left. And basically where Gary's at is that he was told that they'll be bringing players in. They had things lined up. Eventually, for financial reasons, they didn't happen, and they were left not able to do anything. And I've seen, as I've discussed on this podcast as well, I've seen the PSR figures. I've seen that Wolves were around about 2.7, obviously, forecasts-wise, and that's based off a 17th place finish, which obviously wasn't going to happen, but that was the stance the club were taking, and that was their prerogative to do so. They were around 2.7 million below the threshold for breaching the rules, hence why they couldn't bring anyone in January. And obviously they were hoping to get some of these players for a lot cheaper than the clubs were willing to allow them to go for in the end, and they missed out on them. Obviously it's hindsight a mistake, and they've been massively unlucky with injuries. At the same time, they've also massively hamstrung by the finances. So there's some parts unlucky, some parts errors, in my opinion. And I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think they come together to form what has been a quite unfortunate situation for Wolves.
Yeah, there's a few people still kind of, I think there's a few people asking about PSR and about the situation at this moment in time. I think there's a few questions as well. People saying that it's a bit of a myth and that wasn't the case. I mean, like you say, you've been in, you've spoken to Wolves, you've seen the financial figures yourself. So just for to kind of put that to rest, what would you say to that you know, Wolves didn't need to sell this summer, didn't need to sell previously, and that all things were fine and dandy to a certain extent? And it's obviously, you know, different motives and different wants from Fosun as to why they didn't invest.
Yeah, we had this a bit last summer, didn't we, when this all came out in pre-season and a lot of people not believing us. And yeah, quite a lot of criticism and people frustrated, understandably so, because people are, you know, they want their team to spend and want their team to go out and be successful. But the reality is that Wolves were in danger of breaching the financial rules, sold players to make sure they didn't, and had to then work within those parameters going forward. Nunes is an example of a player that, and we said it on the podcast at the time, didn't necessarily have to be sold for Wolves to get over the line in terms of financial restrictions, but selling him allowed them to bring a few extra players in. You'll remember at the same time they brought in Bellegarde, Santi Bueno, Tommy Doyle, all around the time that that Nunes left. So that is true to say that they didn't necessarily have to let him go, but the deal was good. They were able to bring other players in because of it. So, I mean, just imagine how small.
By the way, that deal looks better by the day.
Oh, I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, he's not doing anything, is he? But can you imagine how small the squad would be if Nunes stayed and none of those three players came in? I mean, it'd be absolutely tiny. So yeah, I mean, that's the initial thing. And then obviously January itself, as I say, I'd seen the figures in front of me. They were budgeting off a 17th place finish. Now, people can argue whether that is the right thing to do or not, but the club's decision was to be cautious in their approach and just in case anything desperately went wrong.
This was before a ball has been kicked, by the way. Well, this season, and then going into the January as well.
Yeah, exactly. So by January, Gary O'Neill's argument is, we're not going to finish 17th, give me a bit more money to bring someone in. But the club had made their decision, their stance was, we're budgeting for 17th, we want to do that, the worst possible scenario, and then work forward from there. That's the club's prerogative to do that. That was their decision. Gary O'Neill accepted it and they move on. So because of that and because of the sort of settlement and agreement with Johnny Castrovotto leaving, Wolves were left with around about 2.7 million buffer forecasts, obviously, because they have to give sort of regular forecasts of where they're at. And at the time, that forecast was, 2.7 million above the threshold, which is not very much at all. Obviously, by the end of the season, that'll be better, that forecast, because they won't finish 17th. But at the time, that's what they were budgeting for and that's what they were sticking to.
Yeah, good stuff. What else are we talking about? I've lost my way. Oh, yeah, that's it. So that was my next question. When you talk about the aim, and you said, look, I get it, try and finish in the top half, try and finish as, you know, as high as possible. And from the money point of view, I just wondered, Liam, do you think, and look, it's a small squad, so maybe this might not, this might not work, but let's say Wolves, I mean, they're not going anywhere, they're mid-table, maybe there's a couple of games left before the end of the season and they can't really go up, they can't go down too much. Do you feel that he'll continue picking his best 11 available, or will he look a little bit to next year? Now, we've seen, I think, some of the youngsters, and he's probably made his mind up on some of the youngsters, but do you feel like maybe some of the first teamers who, you know, maybe he wants to see a little bit more of, and going into next season to see where they stand, the likes of maybe Hugo Bueno, Boubacar Traore, you know, Tuanda Chuewa. Do you feel like we might maybe see more of them and getting some more minutes if they're not going anywhere?
The first thing I'll say is that Gary's an incredibly competitive guy. Obviously, he's a former player, so he'll be desperate to win the games. I think he'll want to win 6 out of 6. You know, anything less than that, he's going to be disappointed. But with that in mind, I think it's only human nature, natural, to start to look ahead to some degree. I don't think it'll be wholesale. I'd be very surprised if we see, you know, him taking a lot of risks in games, particularly with the games they've got, because they've got home games that are winnable, and they've got obviously Arsenal's a difficult one, but overall winnable, and away games that are pretty tough. So I think, with those in mind, I don't think he'll make wholesale changes and wholesale risks to the starting 11. But I think there's one or two small examples of where he could look ahead to next season. And the one that springs to mind for me, the one that stands out the most, considering Santi Bueno is playing at the moment, so you've got to put him to the side, the one that springs to mind the most will be Boubacar Traore, in my opinion. He is a player that Gary seems to like, from what I can gather. Difficult to tell because he speaks fairly well of him, but at the same time hasn't played a lot. Small injuries here and there, and then going away for the African combinations as well, impacted his playing time. But I think there's a player there that he likes some of the development he's made, but needs a bit more. And I've spoken about him previously with Gary and asked him questions in press conferences, and he said he's a player that is going to really benefit from a pre-season with us and getting more out of him and learning more about the way we do things and the way we want him to play. With that in mind, I could definitely see Boubacar Traoré starting a game or two between now and the end of the season to give him that opportunity. But as a whole, I think he'll play his best team. I think he just wants to win the games, and for the reasons I've already made or already put out there, I think he'll just want to win games and finish as high up as he can.
Yeah. Just breaking news while we're on air at the moment. It might have a few less games next season because, I don't know if you've seen this, the FA Cup is scrapping replays from round one onwards next season.
There was a lot of talk they were going to do that. So that's not a massive surprise. I'm a bit surprised.
The schedule, I mean, I get the scheduling, especially if you're playing Champions League football, is pretty insane. And, you know, when you bang in African Cup of Nations this year and you know, a lot of these guys are going to the Euros and Copa America. I mean, I think there is a definite tiredness that's really costing people at this stage of the season. At the same time, like, I mean, you're just devaluing the competition, aren't you? I mean, look at all these replays that minnow clubs get and the money. It's become, unfortunately, more about the top teams and less about looking after the smaller clubs. It's a shame, that's all I'm saying. I mean, I'm not saying it's the wrong decision, but it's just a shame for me.
It's the scrapping of the replays, I think it makes a lot of sense from a Premier League point of view, not from a, as you, I think you've just sort of alluded to there, really from the smaller clubs and prize money and all this kind of stuff. I'm surprised they've done it from the first round. I thought they might do it from the third round. I think there was talks about third and fourth round, them doing it from there. So I am surprised.
From the fifth this season, wasn't it, onwards?
Yes, it was, yeah. So I am surprised at that. All rounds played on weekends as well, I think, is one thing that's included in that, which Gary obviously was annoyed about the fifth round against Brighton being midweek, so I think he'll be pleased about that. I'm a little bit torn. I'm a little bit torn on that. It's to be honest, and this might sound like a bit of a putting a downer on things, I'm not sure I can trust any of the governing bodies to make the right decisions. I think occasionally they'll probably more by chance rather than inspiration fall on the right decisions, but I just feel like there's so many mistakes being made at the top level of the game that people get a bit disillusioned by it.
Yep. Right, talk about next season. Talking about, I mean, I was going to mention Dan Bentley there, but I think we've seen from what Gary Neal said that Jose Saez is number one, at least until the end of this season. It remains, we could have a discussion in the next couple of weeks about position strengthening. We were going to do it today, but I think we're going to run out of time as normal, so we'll probably have one next week. But exclusive from Liam Keane yesterday, Wolves face Premier League competition for starlet goalkeeper Rome Jaden Owusu-Aduro. I mean, he's going to be called Rome, surely. But 19-year-old young keeper doing all sorts this season at AZ Alkmaar, and Wolves obviously very much interested, have been in the past. What have you got to say about this? And if and when, and maybe, let's say they did secure his services, if they beat off competition, would you expect him to come in as a number three or a number two? Or a number one?
Or a number one. Brilliant name, first of all. You've got to sign him purely for the name. Did see a lot of Twitter
comments.
Hyphens
going on there, mate.
Yeah, a lot of hyphens. Did see a lot of Twitter comments suggesting that Wolves will want to sign him just to charge extra letters for his name on the back of shirts, which I thought was quite funny. There's, as the story says as well, there's no suggestion that Wolves are close to signing him as it stands, because as every club does, they look at a plethora of players. But he's definitely one, from my sources,
on the radar.
That Wolves are, yeah, he's on the radar and they've looked at. So you remember, I think it was back in November, I published a story to say Wolves were considering a £2 million deal for him. They were weighing it up. They were certainly having a few internal conversations and identified him as a player that they like. But at the same time, AZ Alkmaar over in the Netherlands were attempting to sign the player up to a new contract, and they were successful in that. So that was all in my original story. And then obviously just after that story came out, they got him on a new deal till 2028, which for the short term, at the very least, will keep him at the club. The expectation, because Matt Ryan, a former Brighton and Arsenal goalkeeper, mm-hmm. is their number mm-hmm. one at the moment over there. He's out of contract in the summer. And as far as I'm aware, having read and spoke to, read things and spoke to people over in the Netherlands, he hasn't been offered a new deal yet over there. As far as I'm aware, there's some hopes that Rome Jaden Owusu-Adoro could challenge for the number one spot there next season, despite being 19 years old, which is quite an incredible rise for a player of his age, which obviously will dramatically increase his value. And even him signing a new contract means that 2 million probably won't be enough to secure him, as it is now anyway. Regardless of that, he's a player that Wolves still are keeping an eye on. And then my update to that story was that Premier League rivals Chelsea, as they seem to do with every young player across Europe, are interested, closely following was the phrase that I used, having spoke to a few sources about it. So, competition for Anderlecht, I've mentioned in the old story and in this new story, I've also been keeping an eye on in the Belgian club Anderlecht. So, definitely one to keep an eye on. But at the same time, I think it's important to mention, Wolves have been linked with a lot of goalkeepers over the last few months. And it's one to watch in the summer. There was talk of previously moving José Sarr on, that under the Gin Lopetegui. That cooled down quite a lot because I think Gary O'Neill was a lot more pleased with where he was at than Lopetegui was.
Not after that first goal.
But it's certainly one to keep an eye on because of the amount of links elsewhere to other goalkeepers. And despite him signing a new contract, I think it's... I'm not suggesting that he will go. I think it's just something to keep an eye on. And then if someone like Owusu-Adoro came in to Wolves, it's not going to be coming in at his age, coming in to be number one. It'd be number two at max. But I think the role that Dan Bentley plays at Wolves is so important that Wolves are very comfortable with where he's at the moment. I think any young goalkeeper coming in would quite likely go out on loan somewhere to play because obviously you've got Tom King signing a new contract as well. So it's quite a stacked area at the moment, but despite that, Wolves are still sort of keeping tabs on a few young goalkeepers, as they would do with any players in any positions. They have a lot of players lined up in case other players move on. So yeah, one to keep an eye on at the very least.
KellenToastman.co.uk, our beautiful sponsors, Liam Keane, just looking at some of the categories on offer. And I know that you sometimes don't ice, you don't stretch after working out, and this could be one for you sooner rather than later. KellenToastman.co.uk don't just sell Kellen toasters, they sell mobility scooters and bicycles and all sorts of equipment. Do you know where I'm going, Liam, with this?
I'm a little bit confused, but I'll give you the chance to go ahead.
Okay, well, I mean, look, if you're struggling mobility-wise, or you want to look after one of your elderly friends, cousins, dads, mums, granddads, grandmas, how about the ZT3 lightweight folding scooter Ideal Boot in grey? This is not only just a mobility scooter, but it's also got a chair that can unravel, so you can actually drive it, but then you can pack it up and you can stand and you can walk along. Almost a tricycle. It's unbelievable. I mean, it looks fantastic. I think I might have to get one.
Can you remind me when your birthday is again?
It's November the 27th. I was going to say 44 years old.
I thought it was 20. So that obviously is going to be your 65th. So for your birthday, I mean, this could be perfect timing. This could be exactly the present you need.
Honestly, it's got a little bit of lumbar support there. It's got a couple of gears. It's got a flashing light. Three wheels.
I mean, we'll be able to see you coming from miles away, mate. It'd be unbelievable. I'm really looking forward to seeing you win it. I think it will, as long as you get a colour that suits your interesting dress sense, then yeah, I think it'd be perfect.
I'm just wondering how we can get this into a retweet to give away a mobility scooter, but I'll work that out later in the podcast. How much, Kino, for a lightweight folding scooter?
Well, they're not cheap.
They're not cheap.
For obvious reasons.
Honestly, you've got to help me out here. You've got to think of what your max bid is, and you need to double it because you need to go over what you normally do.
Well, you're talking about a normal. Yeah, it's going to be big money.
Big money.
I'm going high. I'm going really high.
Okay, I love it. I love it.
£600. Oh. Please tell me I've not done you here.
No, it's unbelievable. It's higher.
Oh, no. Oh, God. I messed it up. I was going to say 1,000 as well. I changed my mind.
I knew what the issue was here, but I've still gone into it. We've got to commit now. Higher than 600, but not much.
It's 1,000.
It is less than 1,000.
Oh, get in.
Get in there, baby.
What a steal.
£999. And it's in stock. The brand new Zetwek lightweight folding scooter. There's also kettles and toasters as well. But kettletoasterman.co.uk, your one-stop shop for kettles, toasters, tea urns, insect killers, cookware, outdoor living and mobility scooters. Oh, crikey. Right, should we take some questions from the beautiful people?
Let's do it.
Let's do it, baby. And in one. Do you remember what that was? In one. TV show?
Not a clue, mate.
Prize board?
Never heard of it.
Bully's prize board? And I don't mean Steve.
Bullseye.
Hey, there we go. You don't remember? In one, Jockey Wilson.
What?
Oh, okay. Just forget it. Forget it.
What are you talking about?
Oh, just forget it.
You're so old.
I can't do it anymore. I can't do this. Bring back someone who's got a little bit of age to them.
Good age.
Wolfpack. Pablo Sarabia's contract runs out at the end of next season. Does the club have an option to extend it, or have they spoken to the player about an extension?
So I don't believe that there is. I don't believe that there is an option to extend. I believe it was a 2.5-year deal, so there's a year left this summer. So it's one we've spoken about quite a bit on the podcast recently because of the wages he's on. I think it'll be one to keep an eye on in the summer because Wolves could be tempted to move him on and save those wages and get some sort of fee for him. So, yeah, one to keep an eye on. I don't believe there's any talks opened yet. I think Wolves are very keen to wait until the season's up before those sort of conversations begin. So yeah, keep an eye on that one.
Robin Taylor, if Benidorm is the home to another pre-season, where do you recommend to go and why?
I'll let you answer this one because you had a lot of lovely places that you went to in Benidorm. What do you recommend?
I tell you what, if you're a sci-fi nut, there's a great Star Wars show. I mean,
wow,
it's like no movie I've ever seen before.
I find that hard to believe. I think it is like a movie you've seen.
Darth Vader's lightsaber.
Oh, mate,
it's terrible. I mean, the Death Star consuming poor Princess Leia. The driving's excellent, though, by the way. The Millennium Falcon, the way that it backs up into the Republic Cruiser. Very impressive.
I don't even know where to go with this.
Next question. Andrew Hadfield. If Neto is fit for the last few games of the season, is it risky to sit him or play him if they are looking to sell him this summer? Happy to answer a football question, aren't you?
Yeah, very much so. I was very nervous.
Uneasy. just talking about Star Wars, aren't we talking about? What's the problem?
Yeah, exactly. I'll be honest with you, that last one's turned me completely off the rails. I don't even know where I am, what I'm talking about. I don't know who you are.
You didn't at the time either.
There's no need for that. You were loving it. Oh, God.
Oh,
we are going to get sacked.
We're not.
I don't know. I think if he's fit and available, Wolves will. I think Gary will want to play him, and I think the player will want to play, regardless of, you know, having a move or not. You've got to bear in mind that the Euros are coming up as well, and he'll want to be ready to play and have a few minutes under his belt. So I think he'll play if he's available to play and you know, fit and there's no concerns. I think he'll play.
I think he wants to play as well, doesn't he? I mean, it makes sense for Pedro Neto to play. And I think if he wants to play, if he wants to show his fitness, he wants to get back on the pitch, Gary Neal's not going to say, no, we're not. I just don't see that dynamic happening.
No, I agree. I'd be surprised if he is fit and available and can play. I'd be surprised if they held him back.
Reggie, what's your favourite finishing move in wrestling, Nathan? And what jiu-jitsu move would Liam like to do on you?
Well, you can answer the first
part. Star Wars again.
Go on, you take the first part.
Oh, I mean, I'm so full of wrestling fans. I mean, look, I'm quite a simplistic kind of a guy. So my two favourite wrestlers growing up were Bret the Hitman Hart. Don't even remember him, Kino, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Not
so
really.
I did like the sharpshooter and Triple H, which was the pedigree. So both their finishing moves I used to love. But from an actual classic shocking finishing move back in the day, there was a wrestler called Victoria who used to do the Widow's Peak. And that, for me, back in the Attitude days, was an unbelievable finishing move. She just almost like arched them and wrapped them behind her. And then just dropped down and just looked. It was a brilliant move. So I would say Victoria's Widow's Peak was up there with the best of all time.
Anyway, moving on to real fun.
Jiu-jitsu, just not real, but carry on.
Yeah. Thing is, there's
so when you get your belt, when you get your white belt and you start slapping people, is that a good finishing move, is it?
You're an idiot. I'm blue belt as well. Stop saying white belt. I don't.
You know when you come into the end of your kind of like match, I assume there's video screens there. Does it go, finish him? And then you kind of get your big long arm and then you pull him and then you just, they go down into the pit of skulls.
You're a fool. I would love to do a loop choke on you.
A what? Choke?
Loop choke.
A loop choke. Okay.
I've been perfecting the technique for that and I've been getting a lot of higher bounce with that. I think, it'd be so fun just watching you go unconscious.
You take the mick out of wrestling and yet you're the one who stays up till 6 a.m. watching made-up rubbish in the octagon.
Excuse me, made-up rubbish? What,
oh,
NNA?
Mate, it's all for show.
Made-up rubbish. If you think that's made-up, you should get yourself into an octagon and see what happens.
They're not particularly articulate, are they, those guys?
I don't think they're going to become members of Mensa anytime soon. But
no, definitely not.
But they're going to hurt you.
Mental.
Yeah, I'm going to loop choke you, or I might triangle choke you as well.
Triangle choke me, okay. It's the first time we're playing in a brass band here. Right, Glenn Allen says, obviously put the picture up, didn't we, of me and you in Portugal. People's asking where it is, but it's, was it Pereira Natural?
Yeah, that was it, yeah.
What a place. I mean, that was one of the best settings I've ever had. Great meal, great picture, steady company. Can't have it all, but that was exceptional, wasn't it?
It was amazing. Steady company, me, you, Phil Jones.
Yeah, Phil Jones was there, wasn't he?
The three of us together. I mean, not on the same table, but we were there
no,
together.
No, he didn't get the star table, did he? But he's got to work his way up, you know. I mean, it's Phil Jones, for goodness sake. Alfie says, what are the chances of Tommy Doyle staying? Obviously, everyone thinks he will, but is there a world where Wolves do not trigger the buy option?
I'd be gobsmacked if they don't. It's $4.5 million, isn't it? I mean, it's tiny fee for a player of his quality. The age he's at as well. Even if Wolves didn't want him, which, you know, I don't think is the case. They seem very pleased with him. Even if they didn't want him, it would make sense to buy him and sell him on for 2-3 times the price easily. So, yeah, absolutely no chance, in my opinion, that they don't buy him.
Linda's Lama, last season you described Ryan Itnori as a bit dopey. Have you reevaluated your view of him in the light of his development this season?
To be fair, we've spoken about that on the podcast quite recently, actually. And that terminology that I used came from a place of love. It came from a nice place because he's a nice guy, friendly chap. It's not from a place of malice that that I described him as that. But he wasn't necessarily the most professional. Just a bit lazy at times, a bit dopey, a little bit. Yeah, maybe not. Just away with the fairies a little bit, not quite.
A little
not
bit space
cadet-y. Yes, basically, yeah, not all there. Not in that way, but you know what I mean. Not quite in the room, you know what I mean. And I think I think sometimes players just need it to click, and it's clicked for him now. Not just the performances, but I've spoken to Gary about this in press conferences as well. He's spoken about the professionalism that he's shown, and Gary sort of hinted at the fact that he hadn't been doing that previously. And there's one way you can easily see this. Even earlier this season, but particularly in previous seasons, he couldn't even get through 90 minutes.
I was going to say, he's a bit like that fitness-wise. He's a little bit soft at times and knocks,
bit soft,
et cetera,
yeah.
But
Yeah, fitness, cramp, just can't get through games. 60 minutes, he's going down with cramp and having to come off.
Yeah.
That's not the case anymore. Physically, he's in much better condition, but I think it's because of the attitude that he's having mentally. He's always been a nice guy and good in the dressing room, but it was just that professionalism, and that's the big change. And his talent, which has always been there, is now shining through because of those changes. So I definitely reevaluate my description of him, but for good reason. And we've spoken about that already. I think he's made really big strides on and off the pitch this season.
Say JPS says, if you had to choose one to be a backup to Nelson Semedo next season, are you going with Hoover or Lembekisa?
Well, I hope, first of all, that it's Doc.
Yes.
I think I'm quite pleased with those four options that they've got, fullbacks. I think if Wolves can keep them together, it'd be good. Obviously, remains to be seen if that is the case. But based pure on the question, it's a tough one, but maybe just because of experience, you'd probably go Hoover. Mm-hmm. You know, he's played Premier League football before. He's playing in the Championship right now. I think he'd probably just about go there. But I like Lembekisa. I think there's a good player there. Be interesting to see how he gets on going forward. So, yeah, keep an eye on him.
Christian says, I would like to ask you about the 2024-2025 season. Imagine Wolves do not get a European spot. Potential striker up to £20 million that you would like to play for Wolves, considering the same 22-24 formation and players. I guess he's talking about squad size. But yeah, up to 20 million. It's easy to say that, isn't it? Up to £20 million. But I would say that probably someone who I think is still injured at the moment. We've both said, haven't we, that someone like, if you're keeping your forwards, if you're keeping your strikers, maybe an Elijah Adebayo, that kind of type, depending on what Luton do this season, would be someone who would probably be in and around that fee, who's probably someone who's attainable.
Yeah, I think he'd be a cracking signing. I really do. I think he'd suit really well what Wolves want to do and what Gary Neil wants to do with this team. So, yeah. That would be the name that springs to mind for me as well. But is it likely Wolves are going to spend 20 million on a striker? I don't think so. Doesn't mean it won't. We've spoken before about the fact that, you know, they will pay slightly more if it's the right player, the right sort of investment. But they are targeting, or have been targeting, the sort of 8 to 50 million pound players because they feel they get more value out of these kind of players. So I'd be surprised. And obviously, considering going into the summer with the finances as well, I'd be surprised if it is £20 million on a striker. But for the right player, the right deal, it's definitely possible. So, yeah, for me, Adebayo would be a brilliant, brilliant signing. And that's really the sort of, if they were to bring him in, that'd be the unveiling for Wolves, wasn't it? It's Liam Keane, Elijah Adebayo, reunited after the Warsaw days, back together again, and scoring goals.
Do you want to ask five more questions very quickly, answering them, or do you want to just move on?
You're the host, you choose.
Can you do answers in 30 seconds or less?
I'll do quick, real quick.
Jamie Britton, is Vitinha the worst of the ones that got away? If not, who? I think there's a couple of other people, Pedro Gonçalves probably as well, but watching him perform and score in the Champions League is painful. No, it didn't give him enough opportunity to show his class, in my opinion. What do you think? I mean, for me, he wasn't up to scratch at that time. It just, you know, people can flourish, and it wasn't to be for him.
I remember we had this conversation a couple of years ago on the poddy as well, when he left Wolves and Wolves didn't sign him. I agree. I think obviously hindsight's great and he looks like he's doing really well and a good player. But the season he had at Wolves, in my opinion, he didn't do anywhere near enough for Wolves to warrant spending that kind of money on him. So I can't really blame them for not taking the decision. It's just unfortunate in hindsight that they didn't.
JW, if you could pick a Wolves attacking pair/trio in their prime, who would you choose? Bullen Much, Dicko Afobe and Sacco, Jota Jimenez and Traore, or Juan Cunha and Neto?
It's a tough one, that. I didn't obviously watch a lot of... Well, I didn't watch any live of Bullen Much because I'm too young. But Dicko Afobe, Sacco is sort of my era growing up. So I'd be tempted to go there. But I think I'll go Jimenez, Jota, Traore. I think Jimenez, especially in his prime, scoring goals for Wolves, was just outrageous.
Yeah, when I first came to the club, it was Dicko Afobe and Sacco. Bullen Much obviously missed it, but loved Bully to pieces. I'm sure Bullen Much were top draw. I think the same. Just for some of those memorable days, nights, Jota, Jimenez and Traore, it was exciting. When they were all firing all cylinders, I mean, no one could live with them. Literally no one, not the top teams in the Premier League, could live with them. I thought it was an amazing spell and something that I'll remember for the rest of my life. And I think you will too, Liam. Liam Smith, 89. This is the first time we've been asked this question. Is it correct that if we sell Reinout Nouri, his former club Angers have a 50% sell-on clause?
I think we've spoken about it in every podcast for the last 5 years, even though we've not been doing it for 5 years together. Yes, it is correct.
We're doing it for 5 years.
Angers do have a 50% sell-on. It's a 50% of the profit made. So Wolves signed for about 9.5 million. They would need to spend another roughly 9.5 to sell out the rest of the to buy out the rest of the clause. But obviously, it's only on the profit the Wolves make on him. So obviously, there's been a lot made about Man City this week. Obviously, there's a lot of reported interest, which I don't doubt for a second. But as far as I'm aware, the people I've spoken to, there's not been any direct conversations and contact with Wolves from any club over Eight Nori. Although I imagine there'll be a lot of potential movement coming forward for a player of his quality. So that's the first thing I'll say. Secondly, is Wolves will buy out that 50% sell-on clause, so spend around $9.5 million to buy it out, you know, right before he's sold, if and when he's sold. So if he's sold tomorrow, they will buy out that clause today or tomorrow and get it done literally just before he leaves.
So yeah, Angus can't say no. He's going to go for £80 million here. So no,
Wolves' favour to buy that out. They will do it, you know, the day of or the day before he moves and leaves the club, so that they can maximise their profits they make on him.
I might just put an explainer out there next week, Liam, and just either a tweet or an article, maybe just saying that, so it's set in stone, so we don't have to keep on going over this.
Yeah, pretty good idea.
Probably good. Anthony Harris, final. We've got through a lot of questions today, by the way. I'm quite impressed. So this is the last one. Good question as well. Do you think Jose Sá will be replaced for next season? I can't decide if he's a liability, in brackets, West Ham corner, Forest corner, or an asset, frequent decent saves.
Yeah, as I sort of already said on this pod, he was sort of half out the door. At least there was conversations around it under Lopetegui, and then under Gary and Neil, that has died down somewhat. But Wolves being linked with a lot of goalkeepers does sort of speak for itself as well. So it's actually a difficult one to judge right now. I think it'd be an easier one to answer in the next few months.
I think it's one of those where, if there's not a lot of activity, I think everybody at the club would be quite happy if Jose Sarr is number one next year. At the same time, I could see him going if, you know, there's a decent offer that comes in and Wolves look to move on. And I think there's going to be a couple of keepers who will be available and looking for first team football. You know, I'm going to say someone like an Aaron Ramsdale or someone like that. So, you know, it depends on deals that could happen, deals that might happen. I could see both situations happening at the start of next season.
Yeah, I think so. And my opinion on him is he's probably not sort of progressed as much in the last year or two, but he's definitely a very good shot stopper. But he's just been a bit inconsistent the last couple of years after what was a brilliant first season. So, yeah, big question marks over him.
Right, let's get on to Arsenal against Wolverhampton Wanderers. 7:30 p.m. from Molyneux, that regular time slot, 7:30 p.m. kickoff on a Saturday night. I'll be driving back from London, Keenan. I'm going to see Stranger Things, The First Shadow, on Friday night in London. Are you a Stranger Things fan?
I am. I've watched the show. It's very good. Let me know what it's like, because I might, maybe I'll treat Rosie and not have her spend 50% on the tickets. I'll splash out myself.
Treat Rosie where you get the drinks and she get the tickets.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I probably will do that.
Okay. So it's Arsenal against Wolves. Look, I've said it again. It's interesting. I really don't know what side Arsenal play. Obviously, Arsenal out of Europe at this moment in time. Do they just... devastating defeat. I think Man City win the title now, to be honest, which I just can't see them dropping it, especially with them out of the season as well. But do Arsenal just play their best side? Does a lot of people look tired in that squad? Does he mix it around Arteta? I think he'll probably err on the side of doing that and giving them one last chance, even though they're going to be tired coming off that defeat to Bayern Munich. Keno, before we go on to Wolves, would you think the same? The likes of Saka, Martinelli, Odegaard, do you think they give one more push? Or does he risk it and rest some of these for your Smith Rose, etc., and get some fresh legs, thinking he can get the job done against Wolves?
It's tough, but I think regardless of the fact Wolves are winless in five in all competitions, Molyneux is a tough place to go. This Wolves team, again, regardless of form and injuries, are a tough team to play against. I don't think Arsenal can risk it. I think Arsenal have to play their best team based on the players available to them. I'd be surprised if anyone is dropped or rested, unless there is, you know, they're significantly in the red and the medical department are saying, if you play this player, there's a 80% chance they're going to get injured. Unless something like that happens, I think you have to play all the best players that you've got available to you, because it's this kind of game at Molineux that will win or lose a team a title.
And I think, well, if they lose this on Saturday night or even draw it, it's game over. They've
exactly.
They're in must-win territory now.
I completely agree.
And even
agree.
If they win every single game between now and the end of the season, they might still not win the league. But I agree with you. I think that it's a banana skin against a side, obviously, who haven't played midweek. And I think you've got to pick your best players on the pitch. And I expect the likes of Saka, etc., to be playing. But we'll see what Arteta says in his press conference. Not that he says much, to be honest. Remains to be seen. Obviously, we'll hear from Gary Neal tomorrow. In terms of team selection for Wolves, more importantly, Liam, changes, I'll throw a few at you. Hwang Hee-chan, could we see him from the start? At the back, you know, Ryan Nouri, if he's going to be available, will he play on that left-hand side? Does he play in the left wing-back slot? Do you play Sarabia as well as, you know, Cunha and Hwang as a front three? Does Matt Doherty leave the side? Does Hugo Bueno, is he a factor? What do you think is going to happen?
A lot of this depends on Nouri and Hwang, doesn't it? And it depends on those two for other positions as well. Hwang played probably a few more minutes than I thought he would at Forest. He came on in the, I think it was about 55, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I thought it might be a bit later in the game after a hamstring injury. Obviously not as serious an injury as Cunha's, but I thought he would play less than he did, which indicates that he could start. I think in theory, I'm going to hedge my bets that he doesn't and comes on and plays similar or even half-time depending on the game. Yeah, and starts up against Bournemouth, potentially, especially with there being a midweek game as well. I think with that in mind, I'm going to hedge my bets and say he's on the bench. But I think there's definitely a world where Hwang Hee-chan starts the game. So assuming he's on the bench, I'm going to assume that Nouri is fit, and obviously we'll find out more in the press conference on Friday, but we know that he was very close to being involved at Forest. He travelled with the team. I think Gary's decision was going to be, do I start him or do I bench him, up until the morning of the game, and they had to pull him out of the squad. So with that in mind, I'm going to assume he starts and plays. So I think the team would be, for me, Sarr in goal, Semedo, Santi, Bueno, Kilman, Totti. I think
we're ruling out Dawson for this.
I think so. I think the Doc keeps his place over Bueno. Mm. I really do at the moment, for the time being. In that case, I think we've then got Gomez and Lamina in midfield, Sarabia, Cunha, and Ake Nouri as a front three with Tommy Doyle dropping to the bench. Difficult to second guess Gary and Neil, but I think that's closer to what he'll do. The only thing he might want to do is he might want to play Cunha on the left, which, if he is desperate to do that, it might mean Sarabia playing centrally and Ake Nouri playing on the right wing, potentially.
But I guess a brace helps things if he is on the fence to say, well, just do one more game week and then you can play that on the Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think there's a few decisions, a couple of players injury-wise that make the team, dependent on those decisions, really. But I think otherwise, most of it is fairly straightforward, I think, from Wolves' point of view.
I agree. So what we're giving away? Let's give away a home shirt. I'm feeling generous, Liam. Let's give away a home... We're not giving away a mobility scooter, though. FYI. Sorry. Sorry to disappoint. Let's give away a home shirt, an away shirt, and the third kit.
You're not messing around.
No, let's go for it. I'm feeling confident. I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to Saturday night, especially with that menu. My goodness me. Salivating.net.
Well, you know what? Biz. I'm going to throw this out to you.
Oh, go on.
If you're doing that, your prediction is the one up for the
okay.
competition. Because I've done quite a few recently. I fancy seeing how you get on. I want to see if you can get it in one.
All right, I like it. I like it a lot. Okay, here we go. Well, you can have the floor first and we'll finish off with my prediction.
Okay, with that in mind, it's been a good podcast.
It has been a very good podcast. Enjoyed it thoroughly.
Enjoyable as ever. We always want Wolves to do well. And with that in mind, it's a 2-0 Arsenal win. Sorry, guys.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
wow.
Go Wolverhampton. I hope I'm wrong, but Keane. I hope I'm wrong, but it's got to be done.
Okay. You know what, Liam? I think Saturday night at Molineux's got a nice little ring to it. I think it's going to be an absolute cracker of a game. And I think Arsenal's title hopes are eroded away at Molineux in a partisan atmosphere, reminiscent of the good old days. 5-goal thriller.
Wow.
Wolverhampton Wanderers 3, Arsenal 2.
Wow.
3-2, stunner. Arteta furious. Arsenal players on their knees. The dream of a Premier League title, of a double, of a treble, eroded away as Mateus Cunha seals it with a beautiful header guided into the bottom right-hand corner. It's Wolverhampton Wanderers 3. It's Arsenal 2.
You'd love to see it.
Shall I shake the old eight ball? By the way, that has been right in the last three times. Shall I say, will Wolves win, or shall I say, will Wolves get a result?
No, you've gone for win. I think you've got to say, will Wolves win? I think you've got
to. Okay, here we go. Eight ball. I know you love this sound. Eight ball. Will Wolverhampton Wanderers beat Arsenal on Saturday night? Oh, it is certain.
No
way. It is certain. I love it, eight ball. I love it. Keno, enjoy Qatar. I was joking aside, but I think it'll be a lovely place to visit. And bring me back something.
No.
I've just realised I've got to find a podcast ally next week when you're going to be gone.
Yeah, whoever it is, just make sure they don't upstage me.
Can you can people tweet in with who they'd like to see? Anyone, any guest appearances? If anyone's available, because I genuinely haven't thought about it yet. So if someone's available for next week and chat some Wolves with me, then I'll quite happily get on the old microphone and we'll chat. We'll chat a little bit of, maybe not an hour and a half that we're into now, but we'll chat about an hour. So give me your recommendations. And Liam, enjoy it. I shall miss you. Mr. Ollie Westbury of Shrewsbury Town fame will be joining us at Bournemouth. But that will be irrelevant because the big one is Arsenal against Wolves. From me, from Keno, we'll see you at Molineux Saturday night. From both of us, take care. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Because we're on the attack. The strength of the wolf is the strength of the pack. We're Wolverhampton. We're on our way back.